personally, I think email is going to be the death of property management as an industry. I think it's so easy to hide behind email, particularly when it comes to conflict. And I think BD is no different. We don't build relationships on email. We build relationships in different, you know, mediums now. Even text over email, I'd encourage for BD. Again, though, depending on the customer, of course. But no one builds a relationship on an email.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate to get the best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent, and I'm joined once again by Mark Edwards.
Here I am.
There you are.
Excited to be here.
As always.
Hey, who you got on the podcast this week, Sam?
Well, someone that we've worked with a lot over the last 12 months, and that is one half of Gill & Hooper, Hannah Gill.
She's a great gal. She's been part of Elite Agent and a contributor to the organisation for quite a while, hasn't she?
Well, yeah. She became a regular contributor to Elite Agent last year because she's done so many speaking gigs, and throughout her career, she's still managing director of Independent. Very big rent roll in Canberra.
Massive.
And she was also like issue one of EPM cover for us. There's quite a story about how Hannah and I actually met all those years ago, which probably shouldn't tell on the podcast. But suffice to say, she's got a fantastic knowledge. She's such a good egg. She's got a good heart and helps everyone wherever she possibly can.
Look, when Hannah bounded into the studio earlier on today, she was absolutely sort of thrilled to be behind the microphone, even though she looked like she had a little bit of apprehension there. But I tell you what, some of the information and the advice that comes out of Hannah is just outstanding, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Her team, they absolutely love her. Mm. So I'll tell you what we did with Hannah, because obviously we're going to be talking property management in this podcast, which is one of the hot topics for leaders right now. Like, there's some actionable advice in here for property managers as well. But what some people might not know, like if you subscribe to the brief quite early in the piece, then you might not have got the thank you page that you get if you subscribe now. So what happens is when you put in your email address, it flips to a page with me saying,
Hey, thanks for joining the team.
Thanks for joining the tribe. If there's one thing I could solve for you, what would that be? I think we talked about that in our episode that we did on building a database.
We did. That was one of the common questions that was asked in what can I do to help?
You know, like it's anonymous, so I can't tell who's who, but I take notes because that's what I do. I always take notes. And I took notes on this podcast as well. So if you need to download the show notes, that's eliteagentelevate.com.
Can guarantee you there'll be a lot of takeaways in it.
There'll be a lot of notes. Anyway, what I've been doing is I've been saving up all the questions and all the issues, like on sales where we got Claudio to answer those questions, and in property management where we got Hannah to answer the questions. So in this podcast, she covers everything, like, you know, because her background is as a BDM. So we covered a heap of stuff to do with growth and rent roll growth and signing up new landlords and where to find new leads and all that sort of thing, because that's what everyone really wants to know. All about training, about technology. She's got some great takeaways there, you know, like how to get more productive. I mean, yeah, this is a cracker.
Yeah. Did you touch on Street MBA by any chance?
We did a little bit. Some of the takeaways from Street MBA from 2019, and there have been plenty, and there will be plenty more this year too.
I know. We've got a few very exciting ones coming up this year. We've got New Zealand is going to be one of the tours. We've got another round, which is happening in Sydney.
Yep.
And also Perth.
And, well, Perth's a sellout.
Yep.
Sydney's a sellout. So we've only got a couple of tickets left for, I think, New Zealand.
Yep.
And the second Melbourne tour.
If you're on the fence, get onto it because they're going to be going fast.
They will sell out.
Yeah, they will sell out. The last round of PM Street MBA for this year, being 2020, is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, well, we run those financial years. So we will be announcing some dates for July onwards pretty soon, and also a special event. But I can't tell you about that right now, but I will tell you about that, well, probably sometime in February.
So you mentioned show notes earlier on.
Show notes, eliteagentelevate.com to download the show notes. As always, if you'd like all the notes from all of our podcasts, all the crib notes, if you want the quickest way to assimilate all the knowledge and all the wisdom and all the
links,
brilliant takeaways from all of our guests.
Books, quotes, the lot.
sign up to Elite Agent Extra. You can do that at eliteagent.com/extra. And it's a really small investment to make in your future education in real estate, something future you will thank you for.
Absolutely. So a couple of things just before we leave and get on with the podcast. A, if you love the podcast, hit that like button on iTunes.
Or even the subscribe button.
Or even the subscribe button. But, you know, so give us 5-star ratings. Everyone loves a 5-star rating. And secondly, sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast with Hannah Gill.
Welcome to the podcast, Hannah Gill.
Thank you.
It's great to have you in here. Well, the one time of the year that you're not travelling around the country doing street MBAs, right?
Yeah, taking a little break right now.
Yeah. We had a really big year in 2019. What were some of the big lessons from street MBA, do you think, from the guys that were travelling around with you? Because it was really exciting. First time this has really been done in the industry. Very innovative idea, which I have to credit you completely with. So what were some of the big things that people learned on these tours?
Well, I think what was really exciting and probably rewarding about the series was that we didn't really know what to expect. Obviously, sort of first time formally structuring this sort of series and thinking behind it. And so I think we both had the expectation that it would be valuable to people, but I think it's exceeded my expectations significantly. So the tangible learnings that have coming out of it and the value that people are getting out of it, they're saying things like it's the best professional development they've ever done. And some of these people are like lifelong industry people. And I think that's a real credit and testament to the hosts that we're visiting, just because of the value and the depth of their experience and their willingness to share. But also on the flip side, I think that's also a testament to the people that are participating and learning themselves, because they're so open and so willing to learn. And at a time when the industry is moving so quickly, that's really essential. And if we can provide that through Street MBA, if we can provide that sort of pathway for people, then what a good thing to be doing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to be doing more of that this year too, aren't we?
Very exciting. Bring it on.
Before we leave that, we did visit some amazing offices everywhere from the RAD in Radelaide, which was Toop and Toop and Owens Cassidy and Harris Real Estate, and then up to Sydney with Di Jones and the agency and Novak, and then, well, really all around the place. What were some of your favourite things that you saw that people were really excited about implementing in property management?
Well, I think it's probably broadly beyond not just property management. I think when we're talking best practice, people already know how to do routine inspections. They know how to plan their week. It's not so much about that. It's really that underlying meaningful leadership stuff that Street MBA has really been able to bring out and expose for people. And I think culture's played a pretty significant part of that conversation and changing expectations of staff and aligning that with changing expectations of clients. But also on the flip side, I think understanding that technology isn't a means to an end, but how we can leverage technology to make our jobs easier and to get better value for our people. So they're probably two of the key elements that have come out of it, but very different, but also very overlapping.
And interestingly, like you just touched on culture there, culture is something really hard to talk about. Like, we write articles on culture and, you know, there's a lot of little expressions out there like culture is caught, not taught. But it's really hard to explain what a good culture looks like without actually going into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the highlights of Street MBA. We're actually walking into offices and it's like palpable. You walk into a good culture, you can feel it, you can hear it. It's so different to walking into an office where, you know, they might be having a pretty tough time and it's a very different feeling, very different atmosphere. So it is hard to explain, but I think fundamentally you feel it when you walk into a room.
Mm. Yeah, you feel the energy.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to some more tours this year, and we've got a few exciting announcements coming up in February, so watch this space.
Absolutely.
But meanwhile, we're going to put you under the microscope, because actually not only have you been doing Street MBA and travelling around with Grace, but you've also done a zillion speaking gigs as well.
It's been a big year, yeah.
Yeah. What are people out there talking about trend-wise at the moment? Like, what are you really picking up in terms of leadership and property management?
I think, again, it's a broad conversation, but really what's been interesting, and I've been really fortunate with the opportunities I've had this year to see so many great speakers at these events, but it's just about really taking a chance and doing things differently, I think. You know, the industry's been around for a while, and I think we've always for a long time done what we've always done, and starting to see this huge shift and this innovation and this entrepreneurial spirit in our industry is really exciting. Mm. People are taking chances like they never have before. People are finding new ways of doing things. It's really exciting. And I think 2020 is going to be a big year for all of that.
I've noticed too that a lot of people, like more than ever since, certainly since we started Elite Agent, is that people are trying new stuff. Like, you know, if margins are being eroded, and I think you've got to, right? You've got to start getting a bit creative about what sort of services you're going to provide. And
absolutely. I can't see fees going up anytime quickly, you know, so how can we be more creative? How can we create ancillary services, different revenue streams? And that in itself is quite creative and a lot of fun, because you start to look at the industry more laterally and start to think about things maybe you hadn't previously considered.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to ask you some property management and leadership questions, drawing on your great experience with Independent and with Street MBA and all of the consulting work you've been doing. So our readers, when they subscribe, we send them to a page where they can tell us some of the things that are on their minds. So I've just picked up a few of my favourite questions. So thank you for agreeing to do this.
No worries. Hit me with it.
Okay, let's go. If growth is going to be a focus for 2020 for some people, where do you start and make sure that the team are on board?
That's a really good question. And I think there's probably a couple of elements to that. With growth, I think the business needs to decide what the angle is. Is it more doors under management or is it more value per door? And once you define what way you're going to take that approach, then it's really easy to decide how you start tackling it. So if it's more doors, growth would obviously be around generating leads. Mm-hmm. So in your market, how's the best way to generate leads? Are you door knocking? Are you creating content? Are you doing community work? Like, what does it look like in your space? But if it's more revenue per door, well, then like we touched on earlier, we get to start looking at what other services we can add. And that's where it gets really fun and exciting. Are you going to start offering a pet sitting service? Are you going to start offering Airbnb? Like there's no limit as long as it's connected somehow to property, which I think is pretty cool.
Actually, that's interesting, like a pet sitting service. And also, like, I did an interview with Dean Mackey last year, who said that he offers everything from 2% collect the rent to 30% almost outsourced hotel. Is that the sort of thing that you're talking about here with the Airbnb thing?
Yeah, I think that's really essential, that whole sort of user pays shopping cart type approach. As our customer needs change, they're not all looking for a one size fits all. So how can we capture that market from the 2% to the 20%? And how can we find value as a business if we are doing 2%? What does that look like? How can we automate or offshore or outsource those costs to ensure that 2% is profitable to the business?
Yeah, absolutely, because it can be profitable at all levels just so long as you're not trying to sell like a Mercedes at a Ford cost.
Correct.
Like you've got to make sure that they're in alignment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, next question. You ready?
Ready.
Okay. I've recently become a BDM and want to be the best I can be. And this is actually a really good question for you because that's where you come from, right?
Yeah.
So what sort of education should you be focusing on if you want to be a top performing BDM?
Well, I think BD is essentially the same mindset as sales. So considering yourself a salesperson, behaving and learning like a salesperson. So I think going back to my journey as a BD, the key learnings I had was around scripts and dialogues. And I hate scripts and dialogues. I was never one who was good at practicing them, but it really is true. The more you practice, the better you do get. And as part of that, I'd say closing and overcoming objection. At a conference earlier this year, I spoke about the need to try or close. And most of the room had never heard of that phrase. But it's so powerful because if you can try or close, you can overcome objections and get more listings, obviously, on the spot. And if as a BD, you don't have to go back to a property twice to close it, you get much more efficiency in your time.
So just explain to the people that might be listening that don't know what a trial close is, what do you do?
So essentially, it's the capacity to practice closing as you go along. So we've talked about fees, Sam, and you've let me know that your concern was around rent arrears and I've explained that process. Has that put your mind at ease? Yes, yes, it has. Okay, well, if everything's covered then today, is there anything that you're still unsure about or would you like to go ahead? And so it's these trial closes. And if the customer says, oh, I'm not sure yet, or I've got to think about this, it means that we actually haven't met and overcome their objections. So we go back and we start that process again.
Yeah, because they do say in sales that you shouldn't actually ask for the order until you've actually made sure that all of their risks and objections have been overcome, like you've actually completely de-risked it for someone.
Absolutely. And again, thinking back to my early days as a BD, that was what I was bad at, listening. Because how can we overcome an objection if we're not listening?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really powerful place to start.
Is there any good questions that, you know, like thinking back to those days when you're in a listing presentation with someone as a BD, any good questions that can perhaps draw out what are the real underlying scary stuff that an investor might have in handing their property over to you?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in being pretty straight down the line. So pretty much asking them, what's been your experience? If they're changing from another property manager, what's making you look to change? I think it's easy for people to use fees as a justification, but often it's not to do with the fee. Because if they can see the value in the fee, they'll pay it.
Yep. Okay, so what about the issue of training? So training's a bit of a hot topic in the industry at the moment because budgets have tightened over the last 12 months, as you'd be aware too. So people have to get the most value out of training that they possibly can. And there's always been this question in the industry of how much do I need to implement before I've gotten value out of it? How can you juggle, let's say, implementing some of the wonderful things you've learned with the day-to-day? How do you manage your time?
I think that's a really good question because I think the business as usual can feel all-encompassing, particularly in sort of sales type BD roles, because that's always you're after the next lead or the next close. So I appreciate that that can be challenging. But I think it's about not feeling that you've done enough stuff. It's that you've done stuff that's valuable. So you might go to a conference and you might implement one thing, and that might not seem like a lot, but if the outcome for that implementation significantly improves your business, then it's absolutely worth it.
Mm.
And, you know, to weave in Street MBA subtly, yeah. yep. I found that, you know, people are coming and they're finding really small wins, but they're easy to apply. They're not taking restructures and not having to do new budgets. They're implementing very small incremental changes that significantly impact their business. And that's really exciting because it's really quick and easy to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I did a course myself in November last year. And I was thinking to myself too, like, then another course came up that I wanted to do, which was like a month after that one. And I was thinking, have I got enough value out of this one course? And because I'd come back to the office and implemented a couple of things straight away, the value is not always just in what you implement. It's actually taking some time out to think about things. So if you get one thing out of it, which gives you a return, then that's a return.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good point you just made, taking time out to think about things. I think particularly as the year goes on, we fall into this trap of just churn and busy, busy, busy. And we forget to have that sort of idle time to reflect and consider and look at what we've implemented and revisit it consistently over the year.
Yeah.
And I think that's really powerful, but we don't generally don't do it very well.
Like, I've got a theory on that, is because people don't think of idle time as work time.
Mm.
Whereas I've actually changed my thinking, particularly all through last year, is that I give myself half an hour a day just to draw things.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
You know, to think about it. And great quote by Richard Koch, actually, the godfather of 80-20, he says action drives out thought.
Yeah.
So if you're always acting, you can never think.
Yeah, and it's little times as well. It's like the morning coffee, it's catching a flight, it's driving to work, it's, you know, it's reading even. Reading creates, you know, creativity in itself. So,
yeah,
there's lots of opportunity.
It's redefining work. Allow yourself some space, people, in 2020.
Agreed.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about technology, which is a really hot topic in property management because there seems to be a shiny object everywhere. And particularly, like, I hear people talking now in terms of stacks. It seems like there's something new. How do you tell what is really valuable?
Great question. I agree. There's no shortage of shiny new things. Every week there's a new product. I think as an industry we get inundated with product news and noise, and that's not to say they're not good, but I think when looking at new technology, it's really important first and foremost to be able to answer for your people what's in it for them. Because if we can't answer that for them, there's absolutely no point, I don't think, in introducing it. And so that might be a time saving, that might be an efficiency in how they do their work, that might be one less platform for them to have to look at every day. But if we can't figure that out, it's not worth signing up for, I don't think.
The other thing I'm hearing too, like, I think you've got to build in change management time, don't you? Because, like, I've heard of a few tools being implemented over the past 12 months and people go, oh, wow, that's so amazing. But then you dig into it a little bit further and it's like, well, that took me 18 months to really nail that down into something that's actually useful.
Absolutely.
What's been your experience? Because you've got a big team.
It's probably good timing. We've reviewed our tech stack in the last year quite significantly, reduced from about 12 products. I think we're at about 6 now. So just that process in itself was really beneficial. But I think change management is underrated generally. And I think people, particularly I know in our team, I was aware that I didn't want the guys to feel change fatigue. There's so much happening. They're constantly having to learn new processes and new systems. That's tiring on top of their already full jobs. So I think, again, if we can answer what's in it for me and we can keep that communication happening and get buy-in from the team really early, so have them be the ones testing it, have them compare the products and have them have a say in what they'd like to see change or see done differently, that's been really powerful for our experience.
And then also, like, I remember you and I having a conversation about the cost of technology as well. And I know that in your operation, you're very detailed down to the, I know it costs me X dollars per property for my tech stack.
Yeah.
Is that something that you would recommend that other people really have a look at and have a look at whether or not things are actually giving you a return on investment?
Yeah, and I think that's a simple way to look at it because, you know, per property we measure management fees and letting fees and so on. So by understanding what the cost per piece of technology applied per property is actually a sensible way to understand it. So you might say it might cost me $3 a property as an example to have three pieces of technology. So where are you getting efficiencies out of that? Is it time? Is it repositioning headcount? Is it better service that then results in more business? So if that can be measured, then it's going to make sense. And if it can't be measured, it might not be the right piece of technology.
Good advice. What about technology for business development? I hear a lot of property managers say that they want to build a business development pipeline, but they're not sure how to do it. What sort of technology tools are you using or have you seen used really well to help build a sales pipeline or a management pipeline, let's call it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's no right or wrong. It really comes down to what works for the individual. When I was doing BD, to be honest, I used an Excel spreadsheet and my calendar. And that worked really well for me and I was able to get consistent scale. I know now there's a lot more tech available which automates some of those comms. And I look back and I think if I had that, could have I listed an extra 10 a month or 20 a month potentially? So I think looking at what you can apply that's going to suit your model and your style of working is where to start. I'd love to have had a CRM when I was in BD. And I think there are, you know, lots of options now on the market.
But I think too, like, you know, some people do overcomplicate things and maybe, you know, like if you listen to guys like Josh Fegan, obviously he'll say, can you write down now without looking at your CRM your 15 most important people that you've got to talk to day in, day out? And, you know, sometimes I wonder when you've got all the bells and whistles, do you forget to talk to the people that matter rather than actually sort of being able to go, well, here's my list, here's who I need to talk to.
That's a really good point. And I think that comes back to that authenticity and that being genuine as a person. So I think it can be done well sort of automating communications, but there's nothing quite like a personal phone call, is there, or taking someone for a lunch or a coffee.
Yeah.
I think that's always going to have a place.
What about email? Do you find email works in business development or do you still think it's a phone call?
Oh, I mean, personally, I think email is going to be the death of property management as an industry. I think it's so easy to hide behind email, particularly when it comes to conflict. And I think BD is no different. We don't build relationships on email. We build relationships in different, you know, mediums now, even text over email I'd encourage for BD. Yeah. Again, though, depending on the customer, of course. But no one builds a relationship on an email.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? So this is my next question to you is, with a whole lot of programs to use on a daily basis, the emails and the phone calls still don't stop. How can you make tech work for you more efficiently?
Yeah, I think there's some simple hacks that you can apply, whether that's, an auto response, got your email out of the office for the day, I'll be back to you this evening, those sorts of things. And I think those little things are important because clients do expect, or customers, people generally expect quicker follow-up, quicker feedback. And so just by them knowing the expectations, I think is really beneficial. It's not an easy one to tackle because the expectations continue to increase.
And what about a lot of business development questions here? There's obviously growth a lot on people's minds. But so in sales, sometimes it's easier to have a look at a farm area and know who your target market is. Like, not only do you know where they live, but you can sort of see that this person owns this house.
Sure.
With investors, it's a bit trickier because you might have an office in Canberra.
Yep.
And your investors live in somewhere in New South Wales. Mm-hmm. So how do you track down the investors that might be in your area so that you could begin to prospect to them or nurture them or something like that?
Yeah, I think there's any number of avenues you can take. I mean, there's obviously social targeting and things like that, but I think also being really active in the community, whether that's charity events, whether that's just being engaged. And, I've seen lots of agents do it quite well where they're always in their local coffee shops and businesses promoting and supporting. And I think just that sort of hyper-local approach still really has a place in real estate. And I think in property management in particular, that's not generally done really well. So I think people who do that well, there's always going to be leads coming out of that because it's about the relationship, right?
Absolutely. I don't see that changing in 2020 at all.
No.
Let's do some leadership stuff then.
Cool.
All right. I think one of the big challenges of 2019 has been team engagement, mm-hmm. you know, with a bit of a market slowdown and a bit of a funk, yep. let's call it.
Sure.
You know, like it's been hard for leaders, I think, to motivate their team. And so if a leader's sort of thinking that, you know, the team meetings aren't what they used to be or that they've become a bit boring or that the team look like they're a bit bored, what do you suggest leaders do differently to bring that engagement back in 2020?
You know, I've been guilty of that over the years. You find something that works well and then you look at it 12 months later and realize it's not been working well for a while now. And I think it really comes back to asking the team. I can assume things and I can apply things, but unless I've got the team's engagement and buy-in, it's probably going to be less valuable and less beneficial. So getting them involved at any time, whether that's through surveying, whether that's through meetings, team planning sessions, I think there's lots of avenues and different people will share differently depending on their environment they're in. You know, they might want to be able to talk to you about something they need from professional development plan, but they're not going to stick their hand up in a team planning day to ask you that. So just being really accessible to your people, I think, is a central place to start.
Don't just rely on the team meeting, but actually make time for one-to-ones.
Absolutely. So with my team every year, I still do biannual one-on-ones with every team member and with my senior team every week because it helps check the temperature of the team and it helps really identify issues more often than not so much operational, but predominantly cultural or even personal. So you can actually start to get on the front foot and help people rather than wait till something blows up.
Now, there are probably going to be a few leaders sitting here listening to that going, there's no way I've got time to do that many one-on-ones in a year. So I guess the age-old question is, as a leader, how do you create the time in your diary to be able to do that?
Well, I guess it just comes down to what's important for your business and for your team. So I've always been a leader where people first, as much as my bosses may not like it, I think money second, because I truly believe if my people are happy and they're empowered and they feel that they can deliver an amazing experience for our clients, then the budgets are going to take care of themselves. So I'd rather invest time in my time with them rather than my time doing other activities, because I think that's the most valuable place for my team to start.
What about when you've got different team members at different stages in their career? So you just mentioned that you've got a senior team and then you've got other people that do other roles. I mean, it might be worthwhile sort of talking a little bit about the structure of your team first.
Yeah, sure. So in our team, we've got about 60 staff. And so we've got senior property managers who are generally paired up with a property manager, whether the portfolio is combined or whether they're just buddied up, I don't mind. I think it can't be a one size fits all anymore because people work differently. We've got single portfolios as well. And then we've separated out from the property managers everything that was time consuming, but in my view, lower value. And when I say lower value, I don't mean it's not important. I just mean that the client doesn't see it, so they don't value it. So things like routine inspections, you know, we've got property managers going out for a day to empty properties while the tenants are at work, where they could be building relationships with their clients. Maintenance is another great one. So much time gets spent chasing tradespeople and booking in times. If we can take that away from our property managers and centralise that with a team, which we've done, the time savings are significant.
This seems to be a question that I'm asking in every leadership / property management interview at the moment, because I think most people have dabbled in it in some way now, which has been a real change from a couple of years ago when it was sort of, oh my God, outsourcing. If you haven't outsourced before some of these low value activities, what's the first step that you would take to ensure that it was going to be successful?
Again, it's understanding what the team would like to have change. So there's no value in taking something off them that's really important to them in their view, because there's always going to be that change resistance. When we started outsourcing, we actually conducted a time analysis study so we could understand what our team was spending the most time on. So then we could make informed decisions. And it was generally what we assumed, routines, maintenance and travel. So the more we could take that away from our people, low value, the more we could enable them to do the high value activities.
Yeah. In terms of the outsourcing team, what do you find really works? I mean, I've done some interviews where some people use some of the big outsourcers mm-hmm. and some interviews where people have their own team that they recruit and train and they're actually physically part of their team.
Yeah.
So what has worked for you in terms of actually engaging the outsource team, because you've got to treat them the same way as you treat everybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're an extension of our team. They're just not in the same office, is our view. I think we've got 5 outsource team members at the moment. One's just been repositioned due to a change in our legislation, so the role they were doing, we no longer needed. However, I think by having them able to do the really repetitive work, they do that really well. You know, and it's work that property managers generally don't want to do. So you can get a lower percentage of errors and a quicker turnaround time because they're not getting distracted by, you know, the urgent repair or the phone call that a property's flooded or whatever it might be. They can just get tasks done at a high level. And that's been really beneficial for us, particularly at scale.
When we did influencers last year, about 20 of your team wrote in and told us how great you were.
I didn't even pay them to do that.
No, I know. It was genuine. The comments were absolutely genuine, but they were all quite in awe of the different programs that you put together, like culturally and also in terms of education and things like that. What are you most proud of that you've implemented in the last 12 months?
That's a hard question, just because I think there's so many things we do as leaders that we don't necessarily realise have an impact, and they might profoundly impact someone in your team, and you don't often know that. And so I think what's most rewarding to me in the past 12 months or generally as a leader is just seeing people succeed. And that can look very different. That might be someone, I guess I'll give you a bit of an example. At work, we've got a dream wall, so a bright pink neon sign that says hashtag dream wall, and everyone's got 3 goals around that. So that could be professional, that could be personal, and seeing them work towards those goals and tick them off is really rewarding as a leader. And I think by having those conversations and keeping sort of their career pathways or their personal growth front of mind enables them to feel really empowered. So even if they want a certain role in the team that's not currently available, we can still continue to engage with them and educate them and help them learn rather than just saying, sorry, we don't have that role, and they leave. And so that's been a challenge, but very rewarding for me.
So just circling back on what we were talking about a little while ago, which is how do you engage different members of the team who might be at different stages? Like, how do you actually get out of people where they want to go and what they want to do? Because I think the other thing that definitely came out for me, like reading some of the nice things your team said about you, is that you're very on top of what they want as a career. And I know, like, you know, we've talked to Hayley Mitchell and stuff like that before, that a lot of property managers don't feel like their leaders are listening and don't feel like property management is a real career. They want to go into sales or do something else. So how do you get to that point with your team that allows you to say, okay, well, this is where you're going to go and this is where you're heading and this is where you're heading?
Yeah, I think there's probably 2 parts to that. The first is obviously investing a lot of time into those conversations. So as I said, that's through the one-on-ones, but it's also not necessarily formal. It's through people popping in and saying, hey, like, can I just get some feedback? Or, hey, I saw this course I'd really like to go to. Is that an option for me? And enabling them to make those decisions and look for opportunities themselves. And the other thing that's been really beneficial for us in the last year is I introduced a document I've called Culture Playbook. And it essentially outlines what it looks like and sounds like and feels like to be part of the team. And it talks about what behaviour is expected. And it really, it's empowering and encouraging every team member to take a position of leadership, regardless of their title or their job role or their age. Because I think if we choose to take a position of leadership, we'll find opportunities ourselves. But if we act as an employee who's just there for a paycheck, we're never actually going to grow and look for those opportunities. And that's been significant for us because I've started to see people engage with it and really look for opportunities and really grow personally and professionally. And that's really rewarding.
Amazing. What about some advice for people who are going into a leadership role in real estate, particularly in property management? What advice do you wish someone had given you?
In my experience, people going into leadership roles have usually been a good property manager. And so I think it's really important to have that background because it helps you understand and empathise with what the team goes through. But I think on the flip side, I'd also really encourage people to do it their way. Just because you've come in after a previous manager or just because someone's told you what you should or shouldn't do, I just think find your own groove. That can look very different. Like within my own leadership team in our business, everyone's very different in the way they lead. But it works for them. And I'd rather have leaders who are authentic and diverse rather than trying to live into a certain mold, because that just won't work.
Yeah, so long as the intention's right, authenticity wins. Yeah. What about your reading list? Have you got any books or anything like that are on the list, or anything that you'd recommend?
I have so many books to read. I've not read much in the past 12 months with a bub at home, so I've got a list of about 20 books to read. I'm halfway through Brené Brown's Daring Greatly, and I absolutely love her views around leadership and courageous conversations. So once I turn that one over, I might turn my mind to Simon Sinek's new book.
Yeah, he's got a new one.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of it is.
No, me either.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Perfect.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to answer a bunch of questions from readers.
Okay.
It's amazing. I hope you'll come back and do it between tours this year.
Thank you for having me.
If there's one thing that you'd like people to remember going into 2020 in either property management, sales, leadership, or any of the things that we've talked about today, what would it be?
I think from my perspective, it would be around embracing whatever is thrown at you. And I say that because this year for my team and myself has been quite challenging for a number of different reasons. And I know many other businesses around the country will be feeling that same sort of pressures. And I just think if we're truly prepared just to knuckle down and crack into it, I just think the opportunities that come out the other side are pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's it. You know, like tough times usually present themselves with great opportunities. You've just got to be ready for them.
Absolutely. New decade, why not?
Absolutely. Hannah Gill, thank you so much.
Thanks, mate.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.